We know many of you listen to this podcast on the go, driving to work, working out, even doing chores. Now you can get CPE credit for that time. With Earmark, you can earn free NASBA-approved CPE for listening to the Inside Public Accounting podcast. After you listen to an episode, take a quiz, and your certificate will be ready. Earmark has courses for everyone in your firm, from staff to partners. Get started today at earmark.app or download the free app on the App Store.
Welcome to the Inside Public Accounting Podcast. I'm your host, Rob Brown, and with my co-host, Chelsea Summers, we are giving you the stories behind the data. Chelsea, welcome to the show.
Hey, Rob, welcome.
Today, we're going to do something a little different, Chelsea, because we normally look at the great stuff that you do at Inside Public Accounting, and we spend a lot of time talking about the numbers, the rankings, the trends shaping the profession, but we really talk about what happens before any of that, before that end report lands on somebody's desk, or before we talk about it in the podcast. So this is a special behind-the-scenes conversation on our podcast, how the data comes together, how it's interpreted, how judgment plays a role long before anything becomes inked. So, and this idea came up, Chelsea, because we were getting some questions, weren't we?
Yes, we have been getting a lot of specific questions and general questions. How does it all come together? What do you do? How do you create it? So wanted to address some of that.
And one of the things you talk about a lot in your own personal stories is the need for transparency from the top of the firms and on what's going on so that the culture is built, the engagement is built. And we want to do that here because people want to know what's going on behind performance, behind succession, behind leadership. So we thought it was the right moment to pull the curtain back on Inside Public Accounting. And we want to frame this right, don't we?
Yeah, and I like that, the way you position that. I think we do talk a lot about transparency inside firms, but we don't always talk about how much judgment and care goes into the data that the firms are relying on. IPA doesn't just collect numbers. We're really interpreting the data over time, and that responsibility is heavy, and it sits with me and our entire team every day.
And it's so good that you said that, because accountants are the guardians of data. They know how tricky data can be and they want to manage it right. And they're very understandably suspicious of just spewing out facts and spreadsheets and numbers and things like that. So it's got to mean something. So how about we start here? A lot of people see IPA as solely a data organization. Surveys, rankings, benchmarks, but they can feel like the numbers just arrived fully formed to them. But I know that's not the case. So what do people often misunderstand about your data and how it actually comes together?
Wouldn't that be great if I opened up my mailbox and there was just a package of data all ready to go?
That'd be wonderful. Yeah, all wrapped in a ribbon and ready to go.
Ready to press send on. I think a big misconception is that the data is static or isolated, where it's really not. We've been collecting data for nearly 40 years, year after year. And every response is reflecting behavior and not always intent. I think firms might plan one thing and then execute on another. And that gap is really where the insights that we publish live. So trends aren't just showing up in a single year. It often takes several cycles before something becomes clear enough to say, yes, this is real and not just a small blip in 1 year's worth of data. We have those conversations every year when we see things happening in a way that feels like, ooh, this might not, you know, we were expecting this, and then instead we see this. Is that just an anomaly of the data, or is that the start of a trend that we're going to continue to see year over year? And the numbers don't interpret themselves. We have to do a lot of that.
No, I love it that the judgment matters, and there's a lot of heavy lifting goes into seeing these as you're right. Are they blips? Are they spikes in the data, or is this something that's happening year on year? So let's look at the human side of what you do. One thing that surprised me is how human this process actually is when you told me about it. The conversations, the context, the decisions about what goes in, what doesn't, what matters and what doesn't. So can you talk about the stuff you do as a human being to turn these raw responses into facts, trends, and insights?
Yeah, and that's a lot of where our work really is. We're constantly deciding what is signal versus what is noise. Is it a real shift or a temporary reaction in the environment? And are firms adapting or are they just reacting? So I think there's a lot of pressure from firms to simplify. The leaders want clarity and not necessarily complexity. But oversimplifying the data can be dangerous. You may be missing pieces. So we're always balancing the consistency of year over year data with the reality that the profession is changing very quickly. And how do we, as the survey provider, stay on top of that change and make sure we are really reflecting those long-term trends, as opposed to just asking the questions that leaders want to know at the moment, but next year we're looking at something completely different. So it certainly is an art to creating questions.
There's an art to asking the right questions too, and positioning this so that you get good quality data, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. We really want to make sure we're capturing the broad trends, not just what feels important, but might change by the time next year survey process rolls around.
Yeah. Many people will get a sense, as I do, your co-host of this show, that there's a lot more under the hood with IPA and you don't publish everything. So many people will then ask, well, what gets published, what doesn't? Why don't you publish everything? How do you choose to interpret rather than just release all of the data?
Yes. And that would make my job substantially easier if we could just send it all out the door. But truly, leaders don't need thousands of columns of spreadsheets. They need me and the data that we're asking. So the raw data without context can sometimes mislead based on other factors. It can create false senses of urgency or sometimes false comfort. And our responsibility is to the profession and not just transparency for transparency's sake. Interpretation is really part of our responsibility. We owe the firms that framing that helps them make better decisions, and not just more information that becomes overwhelming that they can react to.
That's very wise. And Chelsea, you're the face, the voice of Inside Public Accounting, but it's not just you crunching the numbers, is it? You've got a good bench there that have real expertise.
Yeah, and I have a great team who helps me with the survey implementation. We're talking to firms. We're taking a real sense of what's going on in the profession and how we change our question set, change our reporting. So I could not do it alone. It's 600 plus firms, 300 data points a year. It is a lot of information, and I have a good team behind me that helps me analyze and interpret all of that.
Yeah. So let's get practical for a moment. If we look at the most recent survey cycles that you've been through, I'm curious what's genuinely surprised you, not what confirmed your expectations so much, but what made you stop and rethink your assumptions? Because they say the mark of an educated person is how quickly you will let go of things that you originally thought were true.
Ugh, isn't that tough, letting go? I think that we're really seeing a gap between planning and execution. Firms are really talking confidently about their strategy, but we're seeing that the readiness doesn't always match the confidence. There's quite a few firms, both small and large firms, who don't have succession plans in place and don't have training and mentoring for their up and coming leaders. And I think that's really a gap when you're looking at where your firm is going. Many leaders are saying that they feel prepared, but the data is suggesting otherwise when you look at their pipelines and their preparation. So we're also seeing some signals of leadership fatigue. I think financial results might look strong, but the transparency and the internal communications are varying widely by firm size. And I think that contrast is telling a story there.
And is there an element of proximity bias here, Chelsea, in that it's a psychological term, but people get so close to what they do that they don't quite see in context. So maybe with succession, some firms think that they're doing great and they're actually not because they don't have that context. Or some firms think they're doing lousy in a certain area and they might be doing better than most. But without the wider industry perspective that you have, they can't truly see that.
You got it. Then that's why benchmarking is so important for the firms. It's easy to kind of be stuck in the way that things have always been done and say, you know, I'm not retiring for another 5 to 7 years. We don't need a succession plan. But unfortunately, time moves quickly and you can't always anticipate what's coming up. So I think, yes, having that benchmarking and having that third party, here's where the average is and here's where you are, is really helpful to some firms, especially kind of getting their partner group to understand, hey, you think we're doing great or you think we're struggling, but here's the data that really tells us where we truly lie.
Yeah. Let's talk about Chelsea Summers for a moment. You've become very prominent in the last 12 months as you're launching this podcast with me, and we are putting more and more of your data and your wonderful stuff out there. But Chelsea Summers as a person, we talked about judgment, responsibility, but you are behind this work. You're running a team. So when you're not staring at spreadsheets or survey responses. Give us a sense of what your world actually looks like.
Yeah, it's probably a little more grounded and boring than people would expect. I spend a lot of time with my husband, and I have two daughters that are 5 and 7. Spend a lot of time with my animals outside. I have a small little homestead where we raise sheep and have a couple horses and way too many dogs, which you sometimes hear in the background. I really like staying busy and dabbling in a little bit of everything. I have a hard time turning my brain off. And I do step away from the numbers. And I think when I do, that distance actually helps me come back with some more clarity.
I'm getting images of Little House on the Prairie with your homestead, but it does make us human, doesn't it, when we portray the personal side of what we're doing? Because like all the accounting professionals out there that we speak to a lot, we can do the work, but there's also, we've got to get rid of the work somehow and live a life.
Yeah, stay tuned on a future podcast, because I have 3 very pregnant sheep outside, and you may see a little lamb on a upcoming podcast. There's a little, little teaser to keep watching.
Just take us back to Chelsea Summers, age 16. Chelsea, how did you get into this game?
So I really never thought that this is where I would be. My background is in public relations and marketing, and I really don't think I ever imagined I would be running an organization with such a brand like this, with the background that doesn't support accounting. But I think that unique perspective that I bring helps to give a different ways of thinking about things. And I've really always been drawn to statistics and storytelling. So understanding how systems work and why people behave the way they do inside those systems really felt aligned with things that I enjoyed doing. So did I think I would be running inside public accounting? No, and the scale sometimes still surprises me. But what I'm doing feels very natural to what I enjoy and what I'm passionate about.
And you are passionate. It does come across that way. But aligned with passion is an emotional involvement and attachment to your job. So I would think there are parts of the job that stay with you after hours. Is there anything particularly that's hard to leave behind when you clock out?
The leadership questions. I think about the people that are making the decisions that affect hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of careers. The leaders who look confident externally, but uncertain privately. And the firms that appear successful on paper, but they feel stuck. And that's hard to set down that responsibility to those firms.
And I know you're having more conversations with leaders of firms as they're leaning into you, not perhaps as a mentoring role, but certainly as a consulting or an insightful role. And you're seen as a leader yourself, aren't you? Tell us a little bit about your leadership style and how you show up.
Yeah, I think that the conversations that I've had and the work that I'm doing has made me more intentional, and I truly practice what I preach. I've been much more transparent. When you really get a front row seat to see how damaging silence or delayed decision making can be, you really can stop tolerating that inside of your own leadership. So I try to make sure I'm explaining context more clearly, to be really thoughtful about timing and respect how much uncertainty people are already carrying in their lives.
Yeah. Last question about you, Chelsea. What do you wish firm leaders understood a lot more about, say, you personally, when it comes to the woman behind the data?
Yeah, I think you said it. I'm passionate. I'm not detached from what I'm doing. I really care deeply for this profession and the people that are in it. The goal has never been to critique from the outside. It's really to help leaders see what's happening so they can act with more clarity and less fear.
One of the things that really stands out, Chelsea, is how you're such a good advocate for the profession. And I love that. You're shining the light on how great accounting is. So let's talk about the podcast itself. The show feels different from a report that comes out, a hard copy, something like that. It's more expensive. It's more reflective. You've got more personal insights in there. So what role does the podcast play in helping you make sense of the data?
The podcast really is an opportunity to give us some space. And that space helps us explain why something matters. It gives us space for nuance. Data can feel very clinical on a page or in a report, but here we can connect it to the emotion and the experience that the firm leaders are having. We could speak directly to the firm leaders who are living these decisions and not just reading about them, putting it away, and coming back to it when they have a data-focused question.
Let's help the audience listen differently going forward when firm leaders hear the numbers? And we're all about giving them takeaways and applications, and here's what you do with it. What should they be asking themselves instead of maybe comparing themselves immediately? We're doing great, we're not doing great, but then nothing else happens.
Yeah, I think the first question that the leaders need to ask about data is, what decision does this affect? Then where might I be avoiding action? What is my firm not talking about yet? And I think what trends might not apply to us today, but 2 years from now, and how can we start thinking about them today? Benchmarking is a starting point for conversations, not necessarily a verdict of A plus B, F. It's really the beginning of some thoughtful conversations inside the firm.
I want to talk about transparency, but just before I do that, you're getting more and more requests, Chelsea, to speak at conferences and events and do keynotes and podcast guesting when people don't just see you as host of your own show, but they want you to come on their shows and talk about it. When I look at the personal brand of Chelsea Summers and the kind of things you talk about, transparency is very dear to you, isn't it? You're one of the few people that really talk about that. So that keeps coming up, both with what you and I discuss with the data, but also in what you think is really important. So tell us why it's such a defining leadership issue.
Yeah. Firms are so much more complex right now than they were 10, 20, 50 years ago. The ownership models are quickly changing. Growth strategies are changing. There's generational expectation differences. And during all that change, trust matters a lot more than certainty. And that transparency that firms have inside firms can help to create clarity. And that clarity will help support retention of your key staff. When leaders are explaining the context, people are more likely to stay engaged inside the firm.
Yeah, really important. That internal engagement, particularly when things are so disrupted right now and changing so fast, leadership need to be visible. They need to be transparent. They need to be passionate. And you're really good at helping them do that. How has IPA evolved as a company, as an organization over the last few years?
Yeah, I think really a focus on kind of accepting that everything is changing very quickly and not needing to have all the answers, which is a really, really tough thing to do for a leader to not have the answers. I understand that. But, you know, the emerging ownership models are raising some really big questions, and the pace of change compared to firms' actual capacity to absorb that change. We're still learning about the long-term impacts of many of those trends popping up. And where the leadership development gaps show up will become more clear over time.
And to that, I see this show as providing real guidance and anchoring firms in changing better and changing quicker. We've sometimes said, if you think change is hard, try not changing. And we're very much equipping firms with the ability to change better and change faster in what we said is a very disrupted world. So, if there's one thing as we close that you want firms to understand, particularly the leaders about the IPA's work, that perhaps doesn't show up in a report or a ranking, what might that be?
Yeah. So Inside Public Accounting really cares deeply about the profession. We take a very long-term view, which sometimes looks like we're not asking the questions that are the big shiny object, but every interpretation that we do is intentional. And our goal is never to judge the firms or critique them for not, you know, being in the top, you know, being on the best of the best list. It's really to create clarity for those firms.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you to finish, Chelsea, in a moment, just to tell us what excites you most about the podcast and where IPA is going over the next year or so. But just to wrap this up, this has been a different kind of conversation, but a very important one. We listen to the firms and we listen to our listeners, our audience, and that they are intrigued at what goes on behind the scenes. We know the data matters, but so does how we arrive at it here and how you use it and the responsibility you bear in making sure that this is insightful and usable. So if you, as the audience of our show, found this helpful, let us know. We always love receiving your feedback. We've got an episode coming up where we will handle some of your questions about the data that we're going through. But let's keep the conversation open because we are all advocates of the profession and we want it to be better. So Chelsea, as we look ahead and we end the show, what excites you most about the journey that you're on and what's coming up?
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time as it's, you know, around the first of the year planning for 2026 and looking at what are we doing the same? What are we doing differently? We've got a lot of great guests that you and I are talking to this year, and I'm excited for our listeners to hear some of those conversations. also really excited to dig into some data points. We did an episode a few weeks ago where we dug into revenue per FTE or revenue per employee. And I think there's a lot of those data points out there that firms can get a better, deeper understanding of. So we're really, you know, digging into the data more and handling some of those topics that are changing quickly and having conversations with leaders who have some advice or best practices or, you know, lessons learned along the way in the profession. So I can't wait for you guys to all hear about what we have coming, and I'm excited to continue working with you on bringing these stories to the profession, Rob. And thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you next time on the Inside Public Accounting Podcast.